Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Game of Thrones Talk, a.k.a. Got Talk.
Got Talk.
Right here on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. Butt Munch Chips, sit on your butt and munch. I am your host, Landon Doan, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, by my best friend of the entire dadgum freaking world, Hunter, dadgum freaking East. How are we doing tonight, Hunter?
Oh, doing really good. I enjoyed this episode probably the most so far, so I am so ready to discuss what you think about certain parts. I need your opinion on a few things.
Yeah, absolutely. Saying this episode was the best of the season feels kind of like an easy thing to say. I've seen a lot of people online say this was one of their favorite episodes, period.
Absolutely. I could see that. I mean, there are scenes in here that we've been waiting for what, 6 years?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
6 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been wanting to see Drogon in action. I've been wanting to see, you know, some of these things that are coming to fruition. So this is exactly what I wanted.
And this episode even gave us some scenes of stuff that we didn't even know we wanted, like the confrontation between Arya and Brienne. Yeah. Oh. It was like, I didn't know I wanted to see that scene, but going forward, I want to see a whole lot more of that. Can we just get a spinoff of those two just butting around Westeros kicking ass?
Yeah, we had like kind of the new power team. It was the Hound, like Old Testament Hound and Arya, New Testament Arya and Brienne. You know, I want another round of this stuff. This is really good. I liked seeing that because, again, the second she stepped out on the screen, I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, like, please go forward. Ooh, yes, more. I want to see this. And they instantly knew to give that to you. It was great. Well, I liked that a lot.
Yeah, and it really, like, it took a scene that, no offense to either Brienne of Tarth or Podrick, it's like, up until Arya entered that scene, was not doing anything for me.
No, I mean, she came back to Winterfell, and that's cool.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and get into it. Winterfell, we'll start there. Yeah. The first we see of Winterfell, Arya Stark is walking up on the gate saying, "Hi, I'm Arya Stark, let me in." And two guards are like, "Fuck you, no you're not."
Yeah, we don't give a shit, get out of here.
It's like, run away.
And you're so insulted, like, this is my home, bitch. And I loved her response of, hey, you know, if I'm not who I say I am, then I'm not going to last long. But if I am, they're going to be pretty pissed you turned me away. So why don't you just let me in here?
Exactly.
Hey, let's be cool.
Yeah. Just go make sure with Sansa. Yeah.
And I like that she disappeared from them pretty quick. I mean, they weren't very, you know,
attentive or even at that point convinced. Though I will say, when she ran, the way she was looking around and the way this episode was shot. And by the way, I thought this episode was one of the better shot episodes, just from a visual standpoint this season. Yes. I felt like even the scenes themselves told stories. Like, the way the camera moved around and you saw Arya's face kind of taking in, it's like, yeah, this is home, but this isn't my home. I felt it was almost like kind of the scene we got with her direwolf a few weeks ago. It's like, yeah, I remember you, and you remember me, but I'm not the thing you remember.
Yeah, we're not in the same place anymore.
And when she ran, or when she disappeared, I thought she ran off. Like, I thought she got to Winterfell, and she's like, I thought I wanted to be here, and I don't, so
yeah,
I'm out.
I don't like this. Yeah. No, I thought about the same thing. I thought, man, she just got here. Surely she wouldn't ditch out just because,
exactly.
You know, this thing. So I was very happy to see her not go anywhere and still engage with Sansa. And, of course, she goes down there, and that's the first thing that she says after they have their, you know, their reunion. I know that the other reunions between the Starks are never going to equal what Jon and Sansa did when they finally got to it, because they were two characters that were pretty meaningless in the earlier parts of the stories. Sansa is sold to everybody, and then Jon just goes up to the wall expecting to die.
Exactly.
Pretty much. And does, technically.
Yeah, he technically does. So he fulfilled his destiny.
So it's nice to see some of these come together, but they're never going to be that particular. They're never going to be what that first one was, because that was the first round of Starks to see each other again, when a lot of times they're just so close and you don't get that.
And us as the viewer, we got conditioned to, the Stark kids are never going to see each other again. At least alive.
We've lost all hope.
Exactly.
At this point,
it is never going to happen. Yeah.
Oh,
though I
terrible.
Will say, the reunion between Arya and Sansa gave me at least my line of the show. I don't know what yours is, and it was really the acting of Maisie Wilson, who plays Arya. It's like when Sansa says, "And Bran came home," and Arya's like, "Oh, that's great," and then Sansa's like just stone cold staring off, and then Arya just has this face of like, "What?"
Yeah, she's weird now.
Yeah, Bran got weird. Yeah.
You know, the goth kid, he came back to
goth
kid.
Yeah, he found the Necronomicon, so it's no longer just a phase.
That's perfect, yeah. He's just, he's not even really Bran Stark. And
no, and we even have that scene where Mira goes to say goodbye. She's going back to her father, and Bran's like, okay, cool, thanks. And she's like, wait, that's
all
it?
You got?
It's like,
My brother died for you.
Hodor died for you. And the best you got is, okay, thanks. And then the three-eyed raven says, I remember being Brandon Stark. And then she says, you died in that tree.
Yeah, in that cave. That's where that character did. It ended.
Yeah.
And now it feels like he's that old man in the tree. He really does convey, that actor is conveying that sort of stoic, just sort of matter-of-fact tone that is, I've seen this stuff. It's not a question of whether or not it's real or if you believe it. Or he's sort of like the Jon Snow. If Jon Snow just had all kinds of attitude with him, like, I don't really give a shit about your opinion. I've seen some shit and you don't know anything. Mm-hmm. You know nothing, Jon Snow. You kiss my ass. I know it all. Like, I feel like that's basically what he would be like. But Jon has the opposite approach. He has this, you know, hey, this is pretty morose. Whereas Bran doesn't seem to be all that troubled. He saw in a terrible line to your sister, showing that his emotional connection to people is just very...
Not there.
Just too weathered.
Or maybe it's there to the point where he knows what to say to hurt people.
Or to get them to leave him alone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because he did the same thing with Arya.
Exactly. I mean, he's just more of this elemental thing. He's part of the landscape now. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not a person. And he shows that with his emotional detachments with everybody, even his family.
Yep.
Which, you know... Even the fake out thing last week with Sansa, it was just, he just didn't have that same oomph to it. And that was another one. I mean, we've had back to back Stark reunions here.
Two episodes.
That's great. But they feel diminished just because of who comes in isn't what they were when they left. Like, Bran's not the little kid that just found out that he can't walk anymore. Mm-hmm. He's something way different.
Like you said, he's some elemental thing just wearing a Bran Stark puppet.
Yeah.
Like at this point, Bran is just a husk that holds the three-eyed raven.
Yeah, and that's the... I realized when I was watching season one not too long ago was those are the visions and everything they're leading up to and all that. Mm-hmm. The direwolf thing, the crow, all this stuff. It's just, man, it's so deep. And so I liked that. But I did like the scene with him and Littlefinger.
Ooh, yes.
When he gets that dagger. And I was very curious to see how this was going to play out because I wanted to see what Bran would say to somebody who's clearly trying to win his favor. Mm-hmm. And he really shows that he's not really playing that game. But I think when he says chaos is a ladder back to Baelish, Baelish has this sort of look of like, how would you know that's what I said? You clearly know that's what I said. How do you know and what does that mean? And then it's interrupted. So even with people who are less than genuine in the household, he still throws them off a bit too. Not nearly as insultingly, I feel, as Sansa or Arya, but he's not playing that game. Again, he is one of these characters that is not in it for the throne, is not in it for the power.
He's above all that.
Exactly. That's what I think makes him this otherworldly thing now. He's just not really a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that also makes me feel like he's, and maybe I'm wrong, but also feels like it makes him a little safe. He's got information that has to be said to somebody. He's the one that I'm guessing is delivering it because he obviously hasn't told anybody else. So he's going to have something to do, kind of like Sam. He's there for a reason. We keep cutting back to this guy for a reason. So I feel like that's where they're going to take him. But yeah, he's this weird kid now.
Yeah, and he's not even really a kid.
He's not even really a kid, yeah.
Yeah, he's a thousands-of-year-old entity that sees through space and time. He's that thing from that one episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yes.
Yeah. I am Goblox thousands of years ago.
I feel like... I feel like the scene back to Arya and Sansa was pointed when I thought the same thing that Arya said. She's looking at the statue and goes, it doesn't look like him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it didn't connect with me until she said it. It's like, oh shit, this is the first time that she's had a chance to
see
this.
That.
Yeah, she because never got to come
home.
The
last time she saw her father, he literally got his head
cut.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Yeah, the line is like, they really should have had it done by somebody who actually knows what he looks like. And then Sansa points out, it's like, this was done under a Lannister rule.
Yeah, nobody really knew his face that well. So.
And those who did had pretty much the same fate that Ned Stark did. So.
Correct. So that was a nice little thing that they had back and forth, but... It was funny, multiple times when Arya has told people that she's going to go kill somebody, specifically Cersei, everybody just laughs.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, that's hilarious. Look at this chick. Am I right? This girl, wow.
This one, yeah, she's going to kill the queen. Anyways,
check her out, right?
We've got pot roast for dinner, so let's go ahead and get in here. That stuff is happening, and then it's legitimized by Bran. It's like, oh, but that's a person on her list. She should be at King's Landing.
And you talk about how the Stark reunions are kind of lessened because they're not really the same people in these reunions. And in that moment, that's when Sansa realizes it. It's like, I've seen the joke on the internet. It's like Sansa realizes that at this point, her siblings have leveled up.
Yeah. If she has not, she's woefully behind.
And that's the thing. It's like 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how awesome Sansa looked running a fucking Winterfell.
Yeah.
And looking like she knows how to run it. Jon should just let her take care of it. Two episodes later with two more Starks in play, Sansa's starting to look like kind of an also-ran.
Yeah. I mean, this is somebody that has finally made a move, but you compare it to the moves that the other people around her have made, she's leaps and bounds behind. Like, she's not going to be the person to defend the castle if it gets stormed, or know something that can protect the family until it's too late, like Bran.
Mm-hmm.
She is really the new Rickon. I think it's Rickon.
Yeah. She's the Rickon of the family.
She's the new Rickon Stark. Crap. Like, she doesn't have as much value. So, and that's true.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't. And with Littlefinger nipping at her heels and always, you know, in her ear, that doesn't bode well for anybody.
Well, and you keep bringing up Littlefinger in this episode. It's like, we've said in prior episodes of Game of Thrones Talk, aka Got Talk. That Littlefinger is playing at something. Baelish is doing something, and we don't know what it is. I feel like in this episode, Baelish might start to realize he might be in a little bit over his head. He might be playing against players that he doesn't have the normal leverage that he has against other people. Because Jon Snow, and hell, for that matter, Arya Stark, would kill him at the drop of a hat. Sansa already and putting up with this shit. And Bran pointed out, I know some things about you.
Yeah, yeah. I know what's up. Not to mention Lady Brienne. Not a huge fan of you either.
Seriously. So that five right there. And four of them are in Winterfell right now. And even the scene, the last we see of Winterfell for this episode, it's Baelish in one of his many scenes just standing over a balcony looking down, plotting.
Yeah, seeing what is sort of looking at Arya and Brienne as resources for him. He doesn't seem threatened by them. He makes polite by bowing to them, but he's really observing this and going, oh, that's nice to know. Like, you could just hear him in his head going, oh, this is good information. I should log this.
But then when you actually hear what closes that scene out, a bunch of caw, 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 caw.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, either somebody sent a raven in from somewhere with a message, or a three-eyed raven is letting you know, I'm on to you.
Yeah, I got your shit, buddy. I know what's up. Like, that's definitely something that I'm curious about. Although Arya going to Winterfell does disprove the theory that I was bringing up last week about the man from Braavos.
Yeah, being Arya in disguise.
So, yeah, that got answered pretty quick, which I'm glad.
Whoops, sorry, that was not Godzilla. That was me kicking our makeshift table. This is guerrilla podcasting,
yeah,
ladies
don't worry.
And gentlemen.
Everybody will live. Nobody was harmed in this making of the podcast so far.
Yet.
So with Arya, that answers it. She's not the man from Braavos. She has not still gone after Cersei. You wonder what she does here. Does she recruit people to go on some quest? Because I don't see that happening. I don't see Sansa leaving Winterfell, and I don't see Jon doing anything but trying to fight the Night King.
Exactly.
So you're really left with fewer options. You have to essentially continue without them. You fought so hard to get back to Winterfell. You tried really hard to see, Jon Snow and all these other people. You almost caught the Red Wedding, which thankfully you didn't.
Yeah.
But at the same time, who are you going to bring on this trip?
Well, and you talk about, like, maybe recruiting. Who is she going to recruit from? It's not like Winterfell is just overflowing with amazing warriors. You got Brienne of Tarth, and then I think after that, the next one up is Podrick. And we all saw how good Podrick is doing in his training.
Yeah, Lady Brienne, who is very formidable. We have to give her her due. She's still whipping the shit out of
him. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And this is level one stuff, and she's not.
She's like, whatever, all right, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, this is just resources, I feel like, for Lord Baelish. I feel like he sees this and goes, ah, good, I know this, and now, in the future, I may be able to use that. Like, that's what he's saying, that thing where everyone's your friend and everyone's your enemy. He's like, well, if you're my friend, then I get these opportunities. But if you're not, well, I may not have that, so I have to go a different route.
Yeah.
Just always scheming. Ugh, always scheming.
And it's like, he's always scheming because that's the character. I'm just kind of curious what his plan is, and if his plan might have not taken into account, he's now playing against some much more powerful players. Man. Even though he has been playing with, you know, people on the Iron Throne, so he hasn't
that's
been
true.
Messing with scrubs. But no. Now, like, especially in Bran, he's messing with an actual non-human entity.
Yeah, he's around something that's supernatural and all-seeing. And it's weird because, you know, physically he's the least imposing of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
He even says it when he hands the knife over to Arya.
Gave up a Valyrian dagger. It's like, a cripple can't use this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I stabbed somebody, but they're going to turn this thing over. I'm dead.
And then Arya's like, ooh, upgrade.
Yeah. She gets a nice dagger. And I think really part of this would, my question of the week is, why'd Baelish give him the dagger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was he planning on Bran keeping it? I doubt it.
No.
But who did he want it to go to if he wanted it to go to somebody?
Maybe?
I don't know. He's always playing three or four steps.
Exactly. And so the most obvious thing I was going to say, it's like, well, maybe he did because he and Catelyn Stark did have, or at least in his mind, have a long-standing relationship. Maybe it does hold some sentimental value. But with Baelish, it's never what is staring right in front of you, except those times when it is. You really shouldn't trust him,
Ned. Yeah. Well, Sansa even says it. You know, he doesn't give anybody something without something in return.
Exactly.
It's going to cost you something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder what that cost is going to be. And I wonder why he even gives that. He's trying to show him favor by giving him the weapon that was almost his demise. But at the same time, to what end?
Yeah, because, I mean, like we said before, Bran said it himself, he can't use the weapon.
No.
And it's like, I was going to say, maybe he did think purposely it would end up in Arya's hands. He gave Bran the dagger before Arya got there.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
so
he couldn't have planned
exactly,
on that, I don't think.
Or maybe he didn't. No.
Baelish
isn't
a Jedi.
No, no. we don't think he is. I mean,
no.
If you've seen The Wire, you know he is Tommy Carcetti.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What up? No.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Watch The Wire after Game of Thrones. That's what I'm saying. All right.
I shall.
We're going to move from Winterfell to, I want to save the big, oh my God moment
that
everybody on the internet's talking about for the very end.
Of course.
So we are going to head to Dragonstone.
Well, yeah, in Dragonstone, we get a little bit of different action here, but it's something unexpected. I didn't see this scene coming. Again, I'm not a book reader, so maybe the book reader saw this coming or knew that this was going to happen, but, when he takes her down to the cave and says, you need to see this,
mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, oh, he's showing her as like, this is all we'll ever need. This is good. This
exactly.
lets me know
mm-hmm.
that this is going to be plenty of weapons and ammunition
so
for
mm-hmm.
fighting the dead. So you've done us a huge favor in that respect. But here's another favor that you need to understand. This has been going on for some time, and these things are real.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so creepy to see the White Walkers
those
chalked
etched,
onto...
Oof.
Oh man, the rocks! Like that's, you know exactly what's going
mm-hmm.
on there. This is really they keep lining them up to be the final boss or whatever for everybody. No matter what your story is, the arc ends with the final boss of the Night King showing up. Did you prepare? Did you not?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like that tells you how the children of the earth and the first man come together,
something like that,
to fight the White Walkers. But that also tells you the White Walkers and winter. Have been coming for a long time. So even if you win, do you ever really win?
No. This is a cycle, and this is just like the fire that purges the forest after some dead woods there for a while. I don't know, but
mm-hmm.
this is not to be taken lightly. And he shows her this, obviously, because I was like, why isn't he already working on this stuff? Like, get the weapons, dude. You're always so impatient.
you have all people, yeah.
Why have you now gained such a sense of patience, you virtuous bastard?
Yeah. Look, I get it. Dragonstone's beautiful, but you need to work.
You
Come
need
on.
To get this done. And he's showing her this, and it's
By the way,
really
$1,900
cool.
in real life if you want to go where they shoot Dragonstone.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez,
yeah,
I did not know.
Go to Priceline.com. By the way, this podcast is not sponsored by Priceline.
No, but it'd be cool to be
sponsored. Yeah, we are open to it, Priceline.com.
Yeah, let's bring it on,
Priceline. Hit us up.
Hotwire, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever we got to do.
We are here to sell out, ladies and gentlemen.
the thing that I liked about, watching Lord Baelish get nervous. Sorry to switch that up. But, so basically, when they have that scene there in the cave, did you feel like there was some kind of tension or anything between the two? Because I wasn't really picking up on that. I did kind of check out somebody's thoughts about this, and they said, oh, it was so palpable and all this stuff. I didn't really catch that.
I wouldn't call it palpable, but I did definitely feel like there were some scenes and, like, the way they were shot and, like, one was standing in perspective to the other and looking, like, I did feel like there were some looks and there was something, but, like, I don't know if I'd call it palpable.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was something that was, you know, just had all this sexual tension or any kind of attraction that much. So it was more, it felt like, still a power move. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, John was still trying to let her know that his point was true, and she responds with, when you bend the knee.
Exactly. It's like, yep, I will totally fight with you against these monsters, which, yeah, it looks like it's been happening for a long time. ... If you bend the knee.
If you bend the knee. You know he's not going to do that. No. But the weird thing was, is they did cut away from that scene. They cut away straight from that to them walking outside to talking to Tyrion and Varys.
Because Dany gets some bad news.
Yeah, but did they have something else to say in the cave? Is there some conversation that was had of like, look, how about this? When we walk out of this cave, we say whatever we want to say. You can say I bent the knee, I'm going to tell my people I didn't, but you're joining us, and we both get what we want out of here. We know that we're not going to do this publicly, but let's just say we did it privately. Knuckles, and let's go. Like, team break. Like, I feel like that could happen, that there's something that was said in there to go, look, I believe in what you're saying, and I know that I agree with I want to tear Cersei down. So it can be a win-win for everybody. I feel like both sides have got to accept that it can be an equal win for everyone.
Well, I think it's easy for us, the viewer, to say, like they need to take, even just a behind-the-scenes deal, it would be a win-win for everybody because we can see all the pieces of the map. So I think it's easy for us as the viewer to say that, but at the same time, it's like, I also think it would be kind of lazy as a storyteller standpoint is if like a few episodes down the line, we have like a flashback. It's like, hey, you remember that one time we were in that cave?
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be pretty lame.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And we totally fixed everything, you guys.
Yeah. We made it perfect there.
Yeah. No, it's like, we saved the rec center.
I feel like I'm trying to make these things be a little too clean. It's Game of Thrones. They're not going to be that way. But I do like the fact that they are seeing each other eye to eye, not just personally, but also to a point of saying, my fight is real and it is here and it's coming or whatever. Like, I feel like they're starting to see each other in that equal light.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to have that respect for one another of, okay, you're not bullshitting and you're not bullshitting. So we've got validity to both of these things. Maybe we think this out. Maybe we work on this a little bit more because a scene later, she's asking him advice.
Yeah, like she goes from straight up yelling at Tyrion, asking once again where the loyalty of one of her advisors lie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To asking Jon Snow, who is practically a stranger, what do you think I should do?
What do you think I should do?
I think in that cave, it's like that gave Jon Snow validity in the eyes of Daenerys because it's like, I think she already like, okay, Tyrion vouches for this guy that he's not crazy, and he obviously believes what he's saying.
Yeah,
so
he's buying what he's selling.
Exactly. So okay, I'll give him something that I don't need, that I didn't know was there. And then she sees the shit in the cave and these old ass like etched into the wall paintings. Yeah, like Davos couldn't have come in here and real quickly just doctored it up. It's even if he minored in art or some shit.
It's just not happening. And you've got these things with these blue eyes that just look crazy, and you're going, okay, here's the validity. This has been going on for some time. Let's make this work. But at the same time, you know, we get a scene later where Tyrion is really called on the carpet. It's like, your family are the ones that we're going to kill. Maybe you don't want to kill them as much as it sounds like you do. Maybe this information I'm getting from you guys is not the right way. I've got 3 motherfucking dragons. Why are we losing? I have 3 dragons. Like, I felt like she was going to say that 5 times to be like, understand, man, we should be winning and we're losing this. And then she turns to Jon Snow and says, what do you think I should do? And he, before he can even get the whole pomp and I would never be one to tell a queen what to look, dude, I need to know what you think I should do because I'm losing right now. I'm at war. What should I do? And he gives, I can't remember the full line of it, but That might be my line of the show. When he gives his little monologue about, if you go in there and burn everything down, you're just more the same.
Yeah, they'll look at you as the same.
Yeah, and he's in a position where he's not trying to take that throne from her.
No.
So he's not a direct threat, so she probably has reason to give him some clout. Like, he, again, Jon Snow is not the guy that's trying to be a king of fucking anything.
And it's like, yeah, he might be spouting crazy shit, but he's clearly seen some shit and knows some shit. So he might actually have some validity to what he's saying. And, like, I do think that exchange in the cave really helped build that relationship. Obviously, we didn't see it, the bending of the knee. But I do think in that moment, Daenerys does realize it's like, oh, shit, he really might be right here. Oh, crap.
This dude not talking some smack. This is not a drill, folks.
Yeah,
she definitely gets to have another perspective on Jon's view of what's going to happen. So this is going to help her level with him. And they have that little quick spout with Ser Davos that says, maybe we should let you guys discuss this. And she dismisses that.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, I feel like Daenerys is already looking at Jon Snow. You're an ally.
Yep.
Whether you're going to bend the knee or not, you're not my enemy. So
we'll figure that out later. Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, she's already kind of done that in giving him the dragonglass. She's like, we'll figure something out later, but we're cool right now.
Yeah. We're going to make this work for the time being. But she really gives it to Tyrion. And she tells him, you know, what kind of a, you know, queen doesn't want to go out there and fight for one's people in this war, a smart one. Like, you're not in the front lines. They don't put the general in the front lines. That's not the right play.
Which, I mean, Tyrion's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. But at the same time, his advice so far doesn't seem to...
Exactly, yeah. And I love in this episode how all this season she's been listening to the plans of, quote, smart men. And Lady Olenna said, I've heard the plans of tons of smart men in my time, and you know why I've made it this far? I don't listen to any of them. and she asked, it's like, are you a lion? No, you're a dragon. Be a dragon.
Do what you're supposed to do. That thing that everybody's scared that you're going to do, do it one time, and they'll never want to fucking see you again.
Yeah, even they'll if it's just one time. There will be survivors, and boy will word and legend of that grow and travel.
And they've already done that when she took back Slaver's Bay, killed the two of them, and said, when people ask you what happened today, I want you to tell them everything you saw. Don't forget the details.
Tell them who I am.
Yeah. Don't ever fucking forget this.
Exactly.
And I feel like that's what we're going to get at the end of this episode when we do get to that point. It's the money shot.
Do we want to go ahead and move ahead to it? Because the only thing other than that is the Theon scene. And it's like, that's my one negative of this episode is the runtime. It was a short episode, clocking in at like 48, 49 minutes. It's like, what you gave us at the end, I'm totally fine with you shaving some time off for. But give us like 2-3 more minutes of this episode so the Jon and Theon scene can grow and build. Because, I mean, There's some unresolved stuff between the two that we just kind of get a brief mention of. Oh, exposition point. I'm here to see Daenerys. Oh, she's gone. Where is she? Cut to the
gate. Yeah. Well, I actually liked this part of the episode. I will agree with you as far as the run times go. I felt like I was going to get a lot more 75-minute episodes. I was going to get a 190-minute episode. I was going to get... I thought these were going to go a lot longer.
Maybe they'll save that for the penultimate and the finale.
Maybe that's what's going to happen. But I feel like that...
A 48-minute episode? It's like...
Yeah.
Granted, what they gave us was amazing.
It's great. If they trimmed any fat... There must have been some fat to be had, because that's not a long episode for this show. Again, we had a lot of cut to the chase. I feel like we're getting a lot of that now. Just cut to the chase. Just give me Arya and Brienne going after it. Just go ahead and give me the White Walkers. Give me the meeting of the Daenerys and Jon Snow. I get it, and I want that to happen, but hey, let's slow down here. Let's let's let that play out. Maybe every scene is crammed with great dialogue, but that doesn't mean that every scene must have dialogue. Like, that's what I liked about the scene between Arya and Lady Brienne was they were moving and showing you what they were doing. You didn't need to talk it out. It was a wonderful sort of break in the consistent dialogue that goes around, no matter if it's Lannister, Stark, Daenerys. We got to see some action in a small format before we go to the big one, but I agree. I liked that Theon showed up and Jon Snow was like, the only reason I'm not killing your ass is for what you did with my sister. And he lets him know right off the bat.
No, hey, how are you? Good to see you. I'm going to kill you now. No.
Nobody's a fan of old Reek.
No.
And I refuse to call him Theon again.
Really?
Because he has become Reek, and that's who he is until he does something worth a shit.
Okay, so you are going on record. You will call him Theon... if... he redeems himself.
Only if he redeems himself. All right. Because the Greyjoy boy has had too many times to man up and do some shit and save his family.
Yeah.
And he has not done it since I've seen this character. So he's betrayed a good character I like. He's gotten tortured to where I didn't want to see him tortured. And then he just became a little bitch and never changed. Mm-hmm. For all intents and purposes, he never changed. The beer he shared with his sister, whatever he did with her to get to Daenerys, it doesn't mean anything now.
Everything that he, rebuilt character-wise towards Theon went overboard with him when he ran. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, literally. I agree with you. I think that that's what you're looking at when you look at that character. It's just a bunch of disappointments. And that's... Mm-hmm. That's something that I'm tired of seeing in a way. It's either kill this guy because he's such a disappointment, or have him earn his his Medal of Honor or whatever.
Maybe in retrospect, it's a good thing we only got like 60 seconds of Theon.
That is true. I didn't want to see him a lot because I know he's a piece of shit. I don't need to see him walk around.
He's consistently a piece of shit. I would have thought that would have been up your alley. You know what? I love consistency.
I do love consistency, but he's just annoying consistency. Oh, that's true though. Wow, I didn't think of that.
Conundrum, yeah.
What did you think of the scene, before we go to the big finale, what did you think of the scene with Jon Snow and Missandei, or whatever her name is, on the cliffs?
With Davos in the background?
Yeah.
I liked that exchange. It really felt like character growth, especially in the sense with Missandei.
Yeah.
And then Davos with, I almost gave it my line of the show at the very end, it's like... No offense, would you mind if I switch sides?
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that they've got the two big characters have these sort of good conscience people next to them, at least it seems at this point, with Ser Davos and Tyrion, because they give a bit of wit with their wisdom.
Exactly.
Sort of like why I liked Lady Olenna was because she was very wise, but she was also very sharp with you.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't playing around. And I did like the thing where Jon Snow, he never seems to say it in any fashion other than, well, I'm a bastard.
Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah, that concept doesn't exist where I'm from, so I don't really get that. And he's like, well, that's quite redeeming or whatever. That seems liberating.
See, I love seeing that aspect of Jon Snow where he's just like, huh, well, okay.
Maybe it's not so bad.
All right,
you know?
Yeah, it's like you don't see that enough of him. It's like that almost humanizing side of Jon Snow. We're so used to seeing this gruff, like warrior, so driven with a single purpose. So it's kind of refreshing just to see like the actual human beneath the veneer, even just in brief glimpses.
it's cool to see that, you know, he's still pretty humble. I mean, you've not lost any cool points for Jon Snow with these scenes or anything.
Even though he's gained some really cool points. He has a sweet looking scar.
That is true.
Right over the eye.
He's got the old sub-zero.
Yeah, and then
he's got
the old
sub-zero scar. Yeah, he's looking good. Looking good, Jon Snow. But it's cool because he really. I couldn't decide on my line of the show, to be honest with you. I couldn't decide whether it was what he said to Daenerys on the beach or if it was Missandei's line of, she's not the daughter of some king we never knew.
Mm-hmm.
She's the queen that we elected, that we wanted for us. I thought that was really good. That lets you know that it feels like Jon Snow is still that humble guy with that line, and Daenerys is still the one that they all want to serve.
Mm-hmm.
So these characters have had these big evolutions, but they're pretty set where they are now of who they are and who they'll probably be till their arc finishes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Whenever that is.
And
it being Game of Thrones, it could be coming sooner than later because in the next scene where this episode ends, we saw some characters whose storylines came very close, if not to wrapping up.
I thought we were going to lose a major character.
So did I.
I really did. I didn't know if it was going to be Tyrion, Jaime, if it was going to be one of the dragons. I don't know, but I thought we were losing somebody. They scared the shit out of me.
See, it being Game of Thrones and this being a show that has no problems killing off major characters, Ned Stark says, what's up?
Oh, yeah. How you doing?
It's like, I did feel a few people were going to be like, again, it's Game of Thrones. Nobody is safe. I felt a few of them were safe. It's like, I didn't think Jaime was going to die here because... You keep saying about how Bran has information that he has to tell Jon Snow and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Coming out of the last episode, Jaime is carrying a very sensitive piece of information that he has to get back to Cersei. Which
in the beginning of the show, Bronn almost digs out of him. Mm-hmm. He says, oh, Lady Olenna, Queen of Thorns, give you one last dig or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he guessed it, but Jaime wisely batted it away, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So... that was where we started the episode, is with this scene of them getting the gold and Bron having his awesome exchanges with Jaime.
I never tire.
You
can't have Highgarden. Why not? We're at war. Daenerys will take it back in 5 minutes. Also, I'm not going to give you Highgarden. I want a castle. I want that one. You can't have Highgarden.
The cool thing about Bronn is it doesn't matter who he's with. It's a buddy cop show.
Yes, it That's really it. Is.
You can put Tyrion in there. You can put Jaime in there. You can put the Mountain in there. You can put... I mean, I want a buddy cop movie with Bronn and everyone.
Yep.
I want a miniseries. I want a prequel. Whatever you got to do, Game of Thrones. Get it done. Because I need to see this buddy cop movie. I loved it. I enjoyed that scene because... He's really going to keep, you know, pissing Jaime off about the castle and the wife. And, look, you pay your debts and you bring it up. Because last time he did, he said, don't say it. Don't fucking say it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to hear it. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
So, you know, he's really going to hold him to that. And he's asking him, you know, you gave me gold and thank you. But there's a castle that was promised and a really hot wife. So I'm going to need a little bit of an upgrade on this one. And that's great. I want him to keep Jaime honest on that. I love their exchanges. And then when we get to the end of the episode, Bronn steals the scene when he introduces Rickon.
Oh, again.
But it's actually Dickon.
like a straight up Peter Griffin just laughing at full like guffawing.
I almost thought he was going to say, why do you keep going by that?
Yeah, it's like
change that shit.
We're giving you an out literally every time we introduce you. Rickon, just say yes.
Just say yes.
Just
one
say
time.
Yes.
No, Dickon.
Dickon's like, oh, you dick.
Oh, I love that Bronn just laughs about it.
I know.
You didn't have to cover it up.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Bronn thinks like me.
I thought that this was awesome because once Bronn gives the little hold on and the noise starts and then the Dothraki are riding in, that's when you knew, okay, that's the second I went, okay. Who's going down? Who's going down, baby?
Like earlier I mentioned how like I thought this was a very well shot episode and they let the scenes tell the story from the time he says, wait, do you hear that? And just the way it's shot, the way the clouds move in and they cast a darkness and you just hear a slow rumble grow to a loud roar and everybody's getting into position, and you see the Dothraki break over the edge and just slowly trickle out.
Just noise everywhere. Oh,
and everybody's bracing for impact, and then...
This huge dragon flies in and just starts, I mean, literally turning dudes to ash.
Like, and there's a reason I'm thinking they have called or said to Daenerys, you don't want to be a queen of ash multiple times, because we saw in this episode the dragon turned people straight up into ash, like some Mount Vesuvius shit.
Yeah, it was next level, because you saw soldiers retreating and stepping straight on chest cavities that were just not there.
Yeah.
They were ash. Your foot just went boom. Right down like it was a light snow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. It reminded me a bit of the Battle of the Bastards because of the scene with Bronn and how he's going through this one shot where this dude in fire bumps into him and he's pulling a sword out of somebody and then this horse collides with something over here and it's this great, just like what you said, it's such a well shot scene. It reminded me of that because it's big, it's one big take and it's got all of these elements of just chaos.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, things are on fire, people are dead, there's a fight coming on, this guy's coming at you, he takes one guy down. And then all of a sudden, he's faced with this gigantic-ass dragon.
Ooh.
And, you know, this is what we get to see. I wanted to see this. I've wanted to see this particular piece of the Dothraki going after a Lannister army. Let's see who's the better on the field, you know? I think that they were outmatched. It was bad with the dragons. But I still think the Lannisters would have eaten shit on this one, even if the Dothraki were all they had to worry about.
I do, too. I mean, like... Well, it's like we have nothing to base this on because the dragon literally fires the opening
just
salvo.
Obliterates this.
Just takes out a big giant chunk of the Lannister army. But I do think it's like later on in the fight we see the Dothraki like straight up standing on their horses, firing arrows,
dropping the
bow and arrow, then just slicing and dicing as they go. So I do think even without Daenerys and her dragon, I do think the Lannisters would have been at a disadvantage.
I definitely think they would have lost it. Now the damage to the cargo probably wouldn't have been as great.
No.
But at the same time, they would have lost this.
Though, speaking of the cargo, I did think it was kind of smart of the show to mention very specifically before the hilarious dick online that the gold that they took from Highgarden made it back within the city limits or the gates of King's Landing. So it's safely there.
It's there.
Yeah, the gold did not get destroyed by Daenerys.
No, so they get to keep their promise. The Lannisters will pay the men from Braavos. And we'll have that paid, and they're surprised. And then there's another investment, the little quick scene with Cersei, where she wants to invest in her navy and her armies and her fortifications, basically.
And the name drop of the Golden Company is a big, like, oh my god, to book readers.
Yeah, I don't know anything of this. Do you have any information
in the world
here?
Of Westeros, these are the best sellswords that you can get. They are crazy expensive, but they do not lose.
Whoa, okay, I'm unfamiliar with this. This is a totally new concept for me.
So a lot of people are saying this is just quick fan service to the books, or this is what Cersei is going to get with her new the new leverage she can use with the bank.
Yeah, because she has paid off her debt, and she has made the point that revolutionaries with dragons don't really give a shit about currency as much as rulers and traditional people in the crown do.
Yep.
So I like that, but man, this was great. This is the scene I've been wanting to see for 6 seasons. Just show me the dragon fucking stuff up.
Yeah.
Just burning through everything.
Dropping napalm. And that was something that maybe we'd seen before in Game of Thrones, but like seeing a dragon like just let go, like with the fire breath. It's not just like fire where it is. It lays like a napalm type effect.
It's
like,
terrible.
It just lays on you.
Everything out. There's no coming back from that. And then, then you feel really, really bad because you're thinking, oh, you should have listened to Jaime. Or excuse me, Bronn. You should have listened to Bronn because Jaime should have been getting.
Yeah,
he should have got the hell out of
immediately. Bronn comes up. Get out of here. Get back to King's Landing.
Back to King's Landing right now.
And I guess you like honor. You have to give Jaime some sense of honor.
I guess I do. Like, yeah, he's at least a captain that's going to go down with the ship.
But at the same time, Bronn's not wrong. It's like you're not just some ding dong like that got a promotion at some point. You're like what, the third in command of this entire operation.
Oh yeah, this for you to be killed or captured is neither one we can accept. So he's very smart trying to get him out of there, but of course Jaime is and I see a lot of fans will probably like that because they want to be behind Jaime. I get
but people, you famously still hate Jaime.
Still can't stand him. I would rather if there was a character to die in this scene, my number one character would have been Jaime Lannister. I would have wanted him taken completely off the map. I would have been satisfied. I would not have felt a twinge of pain. I would probably have slept even better that night. So, for me, I'm not worried about Jaime's safety here, but I was worried about Bronn's safety, especially when he was firing at that damn dragon.
Seriously. You do mention we see the scorpion ballista, or as you might know it on this show, the big-ass crossbow.
The huge-ass crossbow.
Which, I kind of feel like we were a little justified when he said it's like, that's your dragon deterrent. It's like, okay, it can hit a stationary dragon skull. Just a skull that isn't moving. And we saw it in action. It's like, it did hit Drogon.
Yes.
But let me point out, on his way down, Drogon was able to, A, stop. B, see what shot him. C, go over to what shot him. D, fuck up what shot him.
Destroy that
and
thing.
And then E, on his way down, right when he landed, hey, you see that pile of barrels? I'm going to smash it with my tail just because I'm a dragon.
I'm going down hard if I'm going down. Yeah. And I like that, but this whole scene, especially when Bronn gets knocked off the horse with that Dothraki, cutting the leg of the horse off.
Smart play.
Oh like, my god, these guys play for keeps, buddy.
Yeah, like again, it's like you mentioned earlier, you think even without the dragon that the Lannister army would have bitten it. Seeing stuff like that, it's hard to argue because what they can do on a horse is, I think, 2 times what any Bannister man can
do. Yeah, they really remind me of the Mongols. It reminds me of like Genghis Khan and his ilk of like these traveling nomadic warriors. That's all they do. Like they fight. You farm and you do agriculture, and they just kill people. Like that's what they do for a living. So
it's like the line in 300.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a bunch of them. Yeah. You don't want to deal with any of that. So yeah, the fact that Bronn gets to take one of them out with the big ass crossbow was awesome.
I mean that was a nice reveal, but. But just like okay, you bring one and then you put it in some stupid tent. Like really?
Yeah, I mean, least you had it. You knew you needed it.
You
That's
had
the
it,
first
but at
thing.
The same time, it's like again, this is your big dragon deterrent.
I really don't feel confident in it. I'm surprised he hit Drogon at all.
Seriously, yeah.
I thought that like, when he started winding this thing, I'm like, yeah, but he's still a fucking dragon. You gotta try and catch him and. and shoot if, this thing.
Like, and if any character in Game of Thrones ever learns how to zigzag instead of running in a straight line at something shooting at them, like that big-ass crossbow is even more useless.
Exactly. Can we just please get somebody, Lady Brienne or Tormund or somebody, teach these motherfuckers to go left to right.
Seriously, yeah.
Can you just, you can fly. Do you understand that you can fly? I can only go in certain directions. Yeah. You can go in any direction. Yeah,
literally any direction. It's like, can we cut to some unknown house where it's just like, this is the house that discovers the sidestep, and since it's in this late in the season, everybody suddenly knows how to do it?
Yeah, and everybody's still alive in that house because nobody's going to get hit by a stray arrow or something stupid. So, yeah, I was really happy that they got to showcase it, but I also liked that it wasn't that effective. Yes, it did harm Drogon, but at the same time, this was not in an eye, this was not in the skull, this was in the shoulder, and he's still just destroying shit on the way down. He doesn't plummet to the earth completely, but he is definitely wounded by the end of the episode. But at the same time, it's like, it's still it's almost a full-grown dragon.
Exactly,
dude.
And it's like, unless they put poison on these barbs that they shoot at the dragons, something stupid like that, but it's like, okay, I got a boo-boo in my shoulder.
I hope that's it. Cool. I mean, it could be some weird alchemy stuff that they've come up with to poison a dragon. I mean,
it could be, but it's like I said, we have no reason to think so. And honestly, it's like, if they like kind of retcon that, I think that, I would be like, that's kind of lazy.
It is a little bit lazy, but it wouldn't be totally unexpected because, you know, Qyburn was able to get the drug of the kiss that killed Marcella.
Yeah.
He's been shown to reanimate the mountain. If you can bring a dude back to life that much,
you can do a lot of stuff.
You could probably build something, but I think you could build something better to take down a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I think the dragon is so overconfident of like, well, nothing's going to take me out.
I'm a dragon.
I'm going to fly right down there and just burn it. But still, you're right. Still messes so much shit up when it actually gets down there. And then you get Daenerys to jump off and try and pull this thing out. And I love the scene of Tyrion having to watch all of these people. Like, it's kind of telling, like, he wants Daenerys to win, but you almost do feel that when she says, maybe you don't want to kill your family so bad just yet, it's at least Jaime. Jaime's the one that saved his life.
Yeah, and I do think if there was some way that he could cut a deal for Jaime, he would. But at the same time, I don't think Daenerys is in the mood to cut deals for Lannisters.
And especially when she's already been fired upon. And eventually, at the end of this episode, Jaime picks up the javelin or whatever and starts... Charges on her with Tyrion saying, you fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, you can tell he still does care for that Lannister.
He doesn't want Jaime to die because, no. I mean, the last they saw of each other was Jaime freeing Tyrion as a prisoner.
And Tyrion killed their father.
Exactly, because
of that freedom. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think that here you get this really, you know, quote-unquote heroic scene for Jaime, which it is. You know, he might go out as, you know, a crispy little nugget when it's all said and done, but he could kill her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they make that trade, at least Cersei's got a better shot than having to deal with her directly. But yeah, this doesn't look like, this is a little bit of a fake out, but it looks like Bronn saves, I'm guessing it's Bronn that saves Jaime and knocks him into the water, saving him from the fire, but... From the way that I was surprised to see credits roll after this scene, to be frank.
I know, and when the credits roll, I was sitting on the couch, literally on the edge, with my jaw just
what? Hold on, you can't do that to me, man.
I know, and like the girlfriend said, literally the same thing with some swear words.
Of course.
But just for the episode to end on that note, and it's like I do think it's Bronn that saved Jaime because it was somebody on a white horse that dived in at the last second, and the last we saw of Bronn was him looking at a white horse.
Yeah.
So
and he had the little like finger cut off gloves or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure it's Bronn, but the real question comes, and I think that's the question of the week because it's the easiest question of the week: is Jaime dead? Does he just sink to the bottom with the armor?
Yeah, because not only is he strapped into all of that heavy plate armor, his hand is 20 pounds of gold, too.
Yeah, he's so, not exactly buoyant with that stuff.
No, so, like, well, first we have to assume that he's even conscious at this point, that he could swim up if he wanted to. So, assuming that he's unconscious, it's now up to Bronn, assuming he's conscious, cut him out of the armor and get him up and... We have to assume that Daenerys and the Dothraki are still above the water.
And still kicking ass.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that would be my question of, hey, I want to know, and I'm sure they're going to answer that probably within the first 10 minutes of the next episode. But yeah, I want to know, is Jaime gone? What the hell happens? And even if Bronn pulls him out, does that mean that they're prisoners now? Like, what? That's a big deal if they've got, you know, you've taken two of mine, more of that, but two of mine away from me. I think I'm going to take your brother.
Who, by the, not just your brother, commands your army and also is your lover. Which is never
so
cool.
So that's a triple whammy you don't want to happen. So,
and I actually do think Jaime is alive, and we are going to see that scenario of Jaime being taken captive, because in this episode, we had the scene where Daenerys calls Tyrion. It's like you mentioned, it's like, do you really want to see your family get hurt or die at this point?
And yeah.
And I mentioned the last we saw of Jaime and Tyrion, it was Jaime freeing Tyrion, Tyrion being the prisoner. I think we're going to see the reverse of that situation with Jaime being the prisoner to Tyrion.
And Tyrion
being put in that situation of like, okay, I'm clearly with Daenerys Targaryen, I want her to win, but at the same time, that's still my brother who, when I was in his situation, he stuck his neck out for me.
Yeah, he did. And then you wonder, I mean, God, could it happen that both Cersei and Daenerys are that forgiving? Really? I mean, I don't think so. One of them's going to snap, because if Jaime gets back to Cersei and she's like, how did you escape? He's like, well, Tyrion, he's not going to tell him Tyrion let him
exactly,
out.
Exactly, yeah.
He can't tell her that. So what does he say? How does he do that? Because this, what I meant to mention last week was when Jaime disobeyed Cersei, that's not the first time he's disobeyed her, if he chose to kill Lady Olenna that way instead of the way that maybe Cersei wanted to. Maybe mm-hmm. he disobeyed her orders again, which he did with Sansa, which he did with Tyrion, and which he did with Lady Brienne. So I wonder if, how many times will she accept that before maybe she starts to turn a little cold on him? I don't know. But that's a good guess. If Tyrion gets to a point where he could release Jaime, will he?
And that's the thing, especially on the Daenerys side of the storyline, loyalty has been a very big plot point.
Ooh, yeah.
It's been brought up multiple times in multiple scenes with multiple people. You like, where does your loyalty lie? Give me your loyalty. Even with Jon Snow, she continues to demand bending the knee.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Crazy white zombies are coming. Yeah, that sucks. Still, bend the knee.
Asking. Still playing the game of the Thrones that... John is obviously telling us is not worth mm-hmm. the price. You need to forget that. That is old hat.
Stop playing a child's game. It's going to get you killed.
Yeah, that's just not something you need to be doing. But hey, here we got a prime example of Daenerys and Jaime, you know, going at it here. I really want to know what happens to Jaime. I need to see if they become prisoners. How are they treated? Will they be treated with the same kindness that the Sand Snake and her mother are treated with Cersei, or will they even get remotely the same treatment that Jaime got with the Starks back in, you know, whatever season it was where they had captured him?
Yeah.
Like, how do you think that treatment's going to go? Because, you know, Cersei and her ilk have really done a shit show job of Jon Snow's family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how well that's going to go.
But at the same time, she might listen to, but Jon Snow doesn't have full dominion over the prisoners. It's like,
this is correct.
Bronn, I think, might be in a more vicarious situation, because if captured, I think Jaime is a very good political piece to play in this war. Captured,
yes.
Where Bronn is just a sellsword, and it's like he might have some sentimental value to Tyrion, but Tyrion isn't going to stick his neck out for Bronn.
I don't think so, because I can't remember. Wasn't there a scene where Bronn didn't really stick his neck out for him when it was like
mm-hmm.
put up or shut up?
Yeah.
You know.
I can't remember the exact terms that they parted on, but I do remember they weren't good terms, and it was Bronn who kind of.
I think it was the last thing. The last thing that went was, didn't he ask Bronn to fight the Mountain? And he was like, maybe I could beat him. Maybe he's faster. Maybe he's not.
But I think that might have been it.
I think that's the last time they saw each other. So he refused his... I mean, Jesus, can you blame him?
So maybe Tyrion would even be like, yeah, I really can't hold a grudge.
Maybe
I'm not wanting to go up against that thing.
But yeah, I do agree that Bronn can be put in a position here where, you know, maybe there's something that he can get out of this. You know, he had ties with Tyrion at one time. He knows mm-hmm. that Tyrion's not a jackass. So maybe that's enough to get him to think about, you know, doing a little maneuvering here and maybe getting out of a tight spot.
Well, maybe to get him out of a tight spot, but with this Daenerys that is demanding loyalty and has already questioned people on her side that she already trusts in Varys changing loyalty so much, maybe the fact that Braun has changed sides so many times and he's pretty much just going wherever the coin is, maybe that would be a detriment against him.
Maybe it would be. But he's got information. He's close to... he's been in King's Landing. He knows the layout. Not that I think they need that information, because Tyrion does as well. Mm-hmm. He lives there, he lived there. I think that, you know, he has to have a little bit more value. He's going to have to watch his neck, because they may, you know, make an example of him or something if they become prisoners. Again, I don't see how if they come out, they wouldn't become prisoners.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're going to fly away and be like, yep, we're done here. We'll catch you guys later. I don't think that's what's
going to
happen.
Yeah, they're either going to come to the surface. If they're alive, they're going to be murdered, eaten by a dragon, some combination of some swords and spears and a dragon, or they're going to be taken hostage.
Yeah, or all of the above. Like, exactly. It can go in so many ways of just bad shit for them. And I'm really curious to see what we get out of that. I want to know what's going on with Jaime. And yeah, I'm really interested in how Tyrion's going to work this, because you know Daenerys is going to have her eye on him.
Oh, absolutely.
Big time after she gave him that little speech. You know, after the speech she had to give him before. There's just a couple of times she's had to come down on him for his advice, for his ties with the enemy.
And I mean, in retrospect, her coming down on him for the advice, seeing the results of this week, I really can't blame her, because I mentioned it a little bit ago. It's like, this is the first time she stopped listening to what everybody else is telling her and just goes with her gut. It's like, okay, I want to do this. I think this is what we need to do. She does it, and this is the first time that Team Dragon has gotten on the board.
Yes, they, finally.
This might have been a grand slam.
Yeah,
what a way to get on the board this season.
I think it was great. You're instilling fear in the enemy. You're letting them know the dragons are real, and you're going to go ham with them whenever you get the chance.
This is the first time dragons have appeared in Westeros, and what a first appearance.
Yeah, my God, they make a hell of an entrance. And she was smart. She hit him in a spot where there weren't any civilians. This was purely a military attack. This was going after a supply chain. This was letting you know that we're not, you know, dicking around here. This was a good play, because she doesn't go to King's Landing and burn the Red Keep and everybody in it. She goes after a very specific, and it just so happens that her brother and the head of the King's Guard, or Queen's Guard now, with Bronn, is right at the tail end of that. So that's a big scene. I was surprised that nobody died in this scene. I will have to tell you, that's not the style of Game of Thrones that I was familiar with. So not that I think that someone still can't die in the next episode. It's just, I was a little surprised. I thought, even with the dragons now, you didn't need the dragons previously to knock major players off the screen. I thought somebody was going down, whether it was Bronn or Jaime.
Yeah.
I just didn't think they were going to make it.
Let me ask you this of that scene. Was it a little weird for you that Tyrion just kind of appeared out of nowhere, that he found a cliff to kind of watch down on, and he could like eyeball out specifically Jaime and see him approach?
I mean, maybe. I think that there's a lot of convenient things that have to happen here to tie things up to get that point across. I mean, how else is he going to... You know, how else will he have any sway over that? The line from the Dothraki guy, your people can't fight.
Yeah, your people can't fight, huh?
It was like, man, for once you're not talking about midgets. You're talking about, like, the people that I come from.
Exactly, yeah. Like,
oh, that sucks. I mean, it's just these extra digs reminding Tyrion, hey, we're going against your family and your old, house.
And shout out to Peter Dinklage. Like you could tell... He was not enjoying what he was seeing. They
sell it with a close-up again.
Like, seeing his people, like you mentioned, these are literally his people, get just laid to waste. It's like, you can tell, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, this is not a good day for my people. And maybe he does have a little bit of sentiment, but I think it's mostly for Jaime. Obviously, he'll have some for Bronn. But at the same time, I don't think it's... He needs to get over that, because they do have the power to win. And it's nice to see Daenerys do what we've wanted her to do for so many seasons. Just go out there and kick some ass. You've got dragons. She's not wrong when she says, I've got three dragons. How am I losing? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's like having Josh Dobbs, Alvin Kamara, and Jalen Hurd in the backfield. And never mind.
Oh, no.
Different three-headed dragon.
Sorry, that's a whole other game we got going on there. That's not the Game of Thrones. Don't worry.
But yes, that's the Game of Jones, actually. That brings us to the end of... we're calling it... it's actually titled The Spoils of War, but we're calling it Game of Thrones 64.
64, baby. I've been waiting for this 64-bit version.
Yeah, it's like Game of Thrones was okay on Super Nintendo, but when it got to the Nintendo 64.
It took it to another level.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the Rumble Pack.
The Rumble Pack. That's so old school. I love it.
And then the expansion pack. Remember that? Yeah, it's like you had to have it.
Memory cards and all this crap. Oh, my gosh. Oh, those were the days when you had to save on something physical.
man, physical media. What's that like?
Jesus, I don't remember.
Yeah, I know.
It's so gone.
Yeah, thank goodness digital came along, so you can get stuff like this very fine podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Available at buttmunchchips.com. Buttmunch chips it on your button munch. Hunter, where else can people find you in the not physical media?
Yeah, I mean, if you ever catch me in the real world, it's a good time. But if you got to catch me on the virtual one, check me out on Facebook and also at The Tall Effect on Twitter. Trying to get a little more active with that. Not really winning, so I don't know if I'll be doing much activity there. But you can find me on Instagram at The Tall Effect. And again, effect is with an E.
All right, good deal. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Landoz, LANDOZ. That is where you will get the most up-to-date updates, I guess that's terrible wording on my part, of when this podcast drops at buttmunchchips.com. I also host a podcast with Matt Weaver and Justin Kreutzinger. It is the Nerd News Cafe. You can find that at nerdnewscafe.com. Follow them on Twitter, twitter.com/nerd_news_cafe. We have episodes that drop every Tuesday and Thursday at the iTunes Store, the Google Store, Podbean, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcast.
Where did you get those clothes? The toilet store?
Even the dumb one is making an insult. Where the hell were you guys?
Where were you? Oh, goodness.
But Hunter, this was easily the best episode of the season, I feel confident saying.
Yeah, even though it was the shortest one I think we've had so far.
Oh, easily the shortest one we've
had. By a good bit. Mm-hmm. I think this is the episode so far that we've been waiting to see for a long time. It's about time Team Dragon got on the damn scoreboard. Mm-hmm,
because they have been shut out so far.
Man, I mean, we've only got a few episodes left this season. We need to see some victories.
I know, that's the thing. It's like this season is going to wrap up way sooner than we realize.
Man.
And then there's one season left.
That's it. And it's the shortest season of all. I mean, Jesus, HBO, you're killing me here.
You really are.
Just be careful.
Speaking of killing me, I'm killing myself because I think we forgot to declare question of the week. So,
question of the week.
We probably need to do that.
My question of the week was either, why is Baelish giving the knife to Bran? Why give him this knife? He knows it's a waste to give it to him.
That's a good one. I like that.
That, and then of course, Jamie, I want to see, you know, what happens
with Jamie.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm going to spring something on you. I want to introduce a new segment.
Yes, let's do this.
In Memoriam. I want to highlight the people
that we lost.
This episode, Game of Thrones. You guys, I want to give a shout out to all those faceless army men.
They gave it their all. They were the ash that looked like snow on the crossbow later in that scene.
Yep. They went to that big face to the sky.
Valhalla and shit.
Yep. Say hi to Robert Baratheon for me.
Oh.
I love you.
Rob, Ned.
Hodor.
Hodor.
I don't know why I'm talking like this.
Always hit the Hodor. You hit me right in the Hodor feelings.
I don't know how to get out of this. So that's going to be something we're doing.
I like it.
Can we do a retrospective in memoriam? Seriously, this time. Lady Olenna.
Yeah, Lady Olenna. I miss her. We're only one episode from her.
I know.
From her death, and I already miss her.
Yeah, like that's the thing. We've only had one episode since she left us, and we're already feeling the loss. And it's like, that's the biggest name we've lost so far this season, right?
I think so. I mean,
correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, and also Hunter.
Yes.
Yeah, you could correct me more immediately than the listeners.
Of course. I think that's true, because Melisandre, Davos, Jon Snow, everybody. We've lost, you know, some of the Sand Snake girls.
Oh, yeah. But to be fair, was anybody that big of a fan of the Sand Snakes?
I mean, I think they'd already made their point on the show. They'd already done their 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah.
I think that outside of that, that's probably the biggest one we've lost is Lady Olenna. Because that's a house. That's basically the loss of the house at that point.
Yeah. That takes Highgarden off the map.
Yeah, the Tyrells are done.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just end of the line. And speaking of end of the line, that brings us to the end of this episode. So, Hunter, any final thoughts?
Man, I just want to say how I looked forward to doing this. I enjoy doing this podcast, but this episode, it just makes it so easy. Game of Thrones, to me, is such a good show. I know we gush all over it, but it's so easy to talk about and enjoy because, man, there's so much going on and so much that's been built up, and I think it's really... It's payoff city from now on, man.
It really is. And a cool thing about Game of Thrones is I feel like it's one of those pop culture, like, milestones. Maybe milestones is the wrong word to use, but it's one of those things where everybody's kind of cognizant of what's going on as it goes on.
It's definitely a thing. Yeah. It's something that, you know, I've got a friend of mine that's catching up. She just got done with season 6. Shout out to Audrey. She just got done with season six. So proud of her because I've been. I was telling her all last year, like, you wouldn't believe, because she got done once the Red Wedding happened.
Oh, geez.
She's done.
Really? She just tapped?
She was like, you know what? I'm done with this shit. This is BS. I'm out. I can't take this anymore. And I respect that because I felt that way, but I just, I had to come back.
Yeah.
I came back after they killed Ned, so I'm in. but yeah, I think that she's really going to enjoy it because. I just talked to her, and she's saying, oh, man, season 6 was great. I said, oh, you got some shit to catch up on. There's a few more things that you just got to get caught up on. So that's really cool. I think this is one of the best episodes they've ever done. So
yeah, easy. And now that she's done with season 6, as she catches up on season 7, you should tell her to go back and listen to old episodes Game of Thrones Talk, a.k.a. Got Talk.
Got Talk.
You can find those at buttmunchchips.com, the exact same place where you find this episode. And be sure to tell your friends and family. We would like to get some more interaction with you, the lovely listener.
That's exactly what I said to her.
Right? There you go. Brilliant man saying those words.
Great minds.
Yeah, a wise man once said that.
Oh, man, this is great. Yep. Thank you.
Hey, it's always fun. So for Hunter East, I am Landon Doan. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Game of Thrones Talk, a.k.a. Got Talk.
Got Talk.
Right here on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. Butt Munch Chips, sit on your butt and munch. Thank you very much. Yeah, a little bit, but you know, unless you intend to do a lot of Ric Flair impressions,
I'm gonna be
all right. Cool.
I'm gonna be cool.
All right, we should be cool. Right. Ready?
Yep.
All right.